Welcome back to a new week here at The Damage Report. It's a Monday, traditionally thought of as frantastic, although I saw in the chat someone said that this one was crantastic. So I guess we have some sort of Ocean Spray sponsorship or something like that. So I present to you my co-host, a sentient cranberry. Oh wait, no, it's Francesca. How's it going? How's it going, Francesca?
Francesca Quarantini. That's how it's gonna. Every year in quarantine, I just go backwards in letters, A, B, C, D, and that doesn't work.
It works. Yeah.
Hi, John Iderola. What's going on, John?
That was exciting. Very glad to have you here. You know, I enter Mondays having basically done nothing. I haven't even thought for a couple of days, but you're fresh off of your show. How did that go yesterday?
It was great. We had a legendary environmental activist Bill McKibben on, as well as the man who portrayed Donald Trump in The President Show, Anthony Atamanik. He created The President Show, and I did force him to read Trump's printed tweet in his Trump voice. I don't think he'll ever come back on the show again for fear of that.
Probably
but it's
not.
Really fun. So yeah, listen to The Bituation Room, watch it at Franny Fio on YouTube. It's a good time.
You talking about the press release that Trump put out?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, that sounds fun. Everyone definitely tune into that. So normally on Mondays, we plug two shows. We plug Francesca's show, and then for some reason, I always end up plugging John Oliver's show. I don't know why. Anyway, but as I was telling Francesca, this last episode about Tucker Carlson is must watch television. You gotta see it. A lot of it's stuff that we've discussed. My theory is, and this is the most self-serving theory ever, John Oliver doesn't know this, mostly because he doesn't know that I exist. But we are the same person with the same basic missions in life. We seem to focus on the same topics. We cover the same stuff. His is better because he's talented and funny and all of that.
Yeah, so what you're saying is John Oliver is like me, really. So anyway, back to me, full frame on Francesca.
That's a
John
good
Oliver
point, actually.
Is me, and no, we cover the same topics, but just with a fraction of the money. And I've been doing it also for many years. And really, what show am I on? What?
Mm-hmm.
Who's this?
If you combined Francesca and me, I defy you to say that that wouldn't create a John Oliver. That's all it is those two things makes John Oliver. But anyway.
You with glasses, right? Yeah, we are John Oliver. Hey, John.
To give an idea of how unprofessional I am, the reason I'm not wearing my glasses today is I just forgot them at home. But anyway, the reason I mention that is because I believe, and I know that some people disagree, that pointing out who, you know, what Fox is, but especially who Tucker Carlson is, does still matter. And I think that he shares that goal and he does a great job in this episode from the Sunday. So everyone, if you're curious to know more about Tucker Carlson, especially how he got his start and early on in his career, he said a few things that like he would never say now, it would be too revelatory, but he like explains how he wants the news to work early on. You should definitely take a look at that.
Ugh.
Anyway, you know what else we're gonna plug? The new show that's gonna be coming up right after this show on Twitch, hosted by one Dr. Rashad Ritchie. So you know it's gonna be exciting. This is indisputably exciting as well. Premieres after TDR today on Twitch. So some of you are already on Twitch, you can just stick around. Others can head over to twitch.tv/TYT to watch Dr. Rashad Ritchie's new show, Indisputable, right after this one in about 86 minutes. But anyway, before then, we are still contractually obligated to do this show. So we've got an hour of news for you. It's gonna be really exciting. Please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And if you wanna send us comments, tweets, super chats, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with that, you ready to do this, Francesca?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get the crantastic show going.
What is it?
I don't know. Andrew Cuomo is still refusing to step down, and a new poll shows that only about 1 in 3 New York voters thinks that he should at this point, but many Democrats have come out and called on him to step down. But what about the leadership of the Democrats? Well, there it's a little bit more wishy-washy. So asked whether Mr. Cuomo should resign, President Biden said, quote, "I think the investigation is underway and we should see what it brings us." Which those are the words of a true leader, if ever they've been spoken, Francesca. Like, there are things happening and we'll see. That's pretty much all we got out of Joe Biden. What do you think?
I mean, you know, look, I don't miss the guy, but you gotta relish in the fact that Trump is not president as Cuomo goes down, because I'll take that bland, completely I'm in the center of whatever I think is center, which is to the right, more like amorphously moral statement by Biden any day over like probably what would be like a 3-hour rambling speech by Trump about Cuomo as, you know, sexual assaulter, points finger at sexual assaulter in some sort of, you know, Spider-Man meme type situation. But
yeah,
for sure. I mean, I think this is the, I do think it's the right thing for Biden to do now, given especially that he's being padded by a lot of leading Democrats, including Pelosi, who once again is always like, search your heart. Like, oh God, Pelosi, mm-hmm. Nobody has a heart, not even you. You especially, no. Don't you know this?
Well, technically she does. It's stored in one of those expensive freezers at her apartment. But anyway, let's
you gotta stab it, and then all of centrist Dems, you know, sort of crumble. It's very Pirates of the Caribbean. Anyway,
I seriously just watched that movie this weekend. Really weird. When on a news show has one host been about to make a reference to Pirates of the Caribbean, but is stopped by the other host making a reference to Pirates of the Caribbean? Anyway, here's the quote from Nancy Davy Jones. The governor should look inside his heart. He loves New York to see if he can govern effectively. This is a weird quote. What I said at the time that these revelations came forward, I said what these women have said must be treated with respect. They are credible and serious charges. And then I called for an investigation. I have confidence in the Attorney General of New York. Again, with all respect in the world for what these women have come forward and said. So look, I guess if you're not going to call for him to resign, if we take for granted that those two are not gonna do this, then this is about as good as can be expected from them, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I will say there is, you know, I've always said, you know, we're in the ninth ring of hell under Trump. We're trying to get back to the eighth, you know, and then 7, 6, 5, whatever. I don't expect us to get back to actual, you know, reality and sanity, the earth's crust, but you know, we're somewhere deep in there. The point is that under Trump and a lot of Republican responses to allegations of sexual assault and harassment are always met with defaming the women who come out against them. And Trump was a master at this, right? And it was disgusting. And we saw him do it over and over and over again. Something along the lines of essentially, this person's not attractive enough for me to assault them, and on down the line. You know, Cuomo, for his like disgusting machismo, his power hungry dynastic rule, his corruption, has at least said that he thinks it's the right of these women, of anyone, to come forward. And he said that multiple times. And so I have like the smallest little hat off, just the tiniest little party hat on the top of a cake, you know, hat off to that. So I'm at least glad that Pelosi's also sort of, and that the line is like, people should come forward. You know what I mean? We need to understand that this is, it's important to actually come forward with allegations, and that we support women and anyone who does.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, all of the surface level, not 100% explicitly misogynistic stuff is an improvement to not have that. The question is, you know, making sure that people know that you don't believe any of that stuff, is that just a cover for wanting to get the same outcome, which is no accountability? And we'll see. I don't know.
I just want to say, I mean, don't you think they want him to resign? I mean, come on, he's making your party look terrible. Terrible.
Sure, sure. And yet they're not calling for it. So that begs the question, why are Pelosi and Biden not calling for it? I don't have an answer for that question. I honestly,
you know, you can lead the horse.
Loyalty, it could be.
I think they're trying to drop him hints, forgetting that like Cuomo is stubborn as hell and is not gonna take them, and is definitely, and you know, and this is the whole problem with the like, let's see how the investigation rides out. I do think that the investigation should continue whether or not he resigns, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing. If he resigns, it doesn't mean accountability in the investigations is gone, but for sure, you know, there'll be less attention on it. And I've said this on the show last night, that just like Cuomo's trying to position himself to be another martyr of cancel culture. And he's trying to play into this right wing talking point that men are embattled. Men, gropey men are embattled for being accountable for their actions. And I don't like that. I don't want him to get away with that martyrdom either. So I'm split on this, but for sure, look, politically speaking, if he's losing all this support, and Nancy and Biden are all but saying you should resign, he should probably resign.
Yeah, he should. Although, as I said, recent poll shows only 1 in 3 New York voters wants him to resign. So like, it's tough to keep going if you feel abandoned by the party. But if you feel like you can get reelected and there's not going to be any kind of recall or anything, I don't know. He seems like the sort of politician that might be willing to continue under those circumstances.
Right.
But we'll see. We don't know what the investigation could come out with. I do agree with you, though. The attempt to make it about cancel culture, whatever, it's like, that's basically you cannot claim that you're being canceled without it being insufferable in the modern day. But this is another example in which it is insufferable. They're making it like some people are sort of trying to imply that this is some sort of anti-Italian discrimination, which is crazy. And then I don't know the intent behind this tweet, but it's been going around and I want to show it to you. From Shane Goldmacher, says the governorship is everything to Andrew Cuomo. The 63-year-old lives at the executive mansion. He owns no other property, has no other apartment anyone is aware of. Important context as he refuses to resign or even give up the fourth term dream. And I will say what many people said in the replies to this: who cares? He's a multimillionaire. I don't care if he has to shop for a flat afterward. Is that actually resulting in him not resigning? Well, it would be inconvenient to have to purchase real estate. I get it. It's a seller's market. But I don't think that's a really relevant factor in this.
But guys, think about this framing. Like, that is the way, just if you are going crazy and you're like, you know, being told that patriarchy doesn't exist or men's rights activists have got you down on Reddit, just go to this quote. Go and see the way that we white gloves powerful rich men, powerful rich gropey men, right? All of the time. Well, look guys, being governor is all he knows. That's why he should stay governor. Hello voters, I don't know how to do anything else but be really powerful and wield a bunch of money around and cut Medicaid. So please give me another term. Please, like the amount of privilege to even get a headline like that, to even get any kind of reporting like that. I mean, God, I hope they're getting a good table in whatever new Manhattan restaurant is, I don't know, hot right now. Whatever is hot on the streets. And I do mean eating outdoors in the sidewalk is hot under COVID right now. For that headline, for that kind of framing. Yeah, it's insane.
You just, okay, if you have to resign in disgrace, just do what other former failed governors have done. Just go on the Masked Singer, man. Just, you know, make some moves, grind it out, you know? Anyway, as Ken Klippenstein says, rise and grind, okay? Anyway,
Cuomo would be so identifiable immediately.
Why? Like, I've never seen one of the masked ones
like
on the judge.
A wrecking ball. I came in.
And he'd wear the outfit. Anyway, okay, so we'll see what's going to happen. I assume we're probably in this for the long haul until the investigation comes out. If, you know, all of those other Democrats turning on him didn't make him resign last week, I don't know why, with, you know, entering into a new news cycle, he would resign this week, but we'll see.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The U.S. has been doing pretty well day by day in vaccinating over the weekend. Millions of people per day were actually vaccinated. But unfortunately, if the goal is to reach herd immunity through a combination of the regrettable huge number of COVID cases over the past year, as well as widespread vaccination, well, there's a big problem with that. And that is one demographic that seems to have very little interest in getting vaccinated. Now, there's vaccine skepticism to go around, but there's one group that stands out as the least likely to get it, and that is Republican men, 49% of whom said no when asked if a vaccine for the coronavirus is made available to you, will you choose to be vaccinated? This is compared to 30% of all adults answering no. So that's its own problem. But Republican men, even more so than Trump voters in general, Republican women, men in general, they are far more likely to say that they're not going to get it. And why is that? What could be done about it? Well, Dr. Anthony Fauci was on Chris Wallace's show, and he was asked about, for these particular men, what if Trump were to come out really in support of the vaccine? And here's what he had to say.
Chris, I think it would make all the difference in the world. He's a very widely popular person among Republicans. If he came out and said, go and get vaccinated, it's really important for your health, the health of your family, and the health of the country. It seems absolutely inevitable that the vast majority of people who are his close followers would listen to him. He's such a strongly popular person. I cannot imagine that if he comes out that they would not get vaccinated. It would be very helpful to the effort for that to happen. I'm very surprised at the high percentage of Republicans who say they don't want to get vaccinated. I don't understand where that's coming from. This is not a political issue. This is a public health issue. And the history of vaccinology tells us, when you look at smallpox, polio, measles, all the things that vaccines have been so incredibly helpful in getting us out of difficulty with those infections. I just don't get it, Chris, why they don't want to get vaccinated.
So, the stuff in the latter half of that was certainly interesting. We could diagnose that, or we can go over it a little bit. But where he says in the beginning about Trump, Francesca, how complimentary towards Trump was he there? He's such a big, powerful, popular man. It would be such a strong move to approve of the vaccine and all of that.
I know are getting vaccinated. They get it right in their big deltoid muscle. Is this the deltoid? I don't know. I don't have it. Close. They just get it right in there. Yeah.
That's what big strong men do. If you're suffering from low T, get a big V, I guess. That's the ad that we're gonna release. So it seemed like that was targeted to make it an appealing prospect to Trump, but maybe perhaps undercut a bit by the fact that he was talking to Chris Wallace. I don't think that when it's Chris Wallace and Fauci, Trump is watching TV at that particular moment. I think he takes that moment to go get another Diet Coke.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't. First of all, my problem with Fauci on this is he himself is still being very ignorant, and I think deliberately ignorant to the clear misinformation that he was trying to be roped into during the Trump administration and during the last year of COVID. Like, homie, he politicized mask wearing. You don't think he's gonna politicize the vaccine? You saw this coming a mile away. Of course you know why. And so he won't say it. And so, and I get maybe he won't say it. But I think there's a way to say, look, this is what happens when leadership does not show confidence in science and does not show confidence in the body of work that myself and many, many others have studied for decades and decades that have led to blank, like the, you know, stamped out smallpox or whatever it is. Like, tout your achievements, talk about things, but the sort of like, I really couldn't guess why. You know why?
You've no idea.
Yeah, and that's why you're asking Trump to come out and you know, publicly say that he endorses the vaccine, which, by the way, John, my God, I have so many problems with this. Like, which is it, right? Like, Trump just touted that he gave Americans the vaccine in his official letterhead tweet, but he won't actually come out and either say, I got the vaccine and you should too, but he wants credit for it. I don't get how any of this works.
That's a question that Chris Wallace actually had for Dr. Fauci as well. And here's what Fauci had to say.
Puzzling to me. I mean, clearly Operation Warp Speed started in the Trump administration. It was very successful in getting us the vaccines we have right now. It seems like an intrinsic contradiction. The fact that you had a program that was started during his pregnancy and he's not out telling people to get vaccinated. I wish he would. He has such an incredible influence over people in the Republican Party. It would really be a game changer if he did.
Yeah, I don't know what that Freudian slip there about the pregnancy was. That's, let's just move on if we can. But yeah, it's the weirdest thing. It's like, everybody needs to give me credit. Like, he wants the credit so bad. But like, could you vaccinate me like behind closed doors? Like, I don't want anyone to actually see it, because that would make me seem weak. Everyone, the vaccine's great, but like Bill Gates is putting chips in your brain or whatever. It's this weird. I don't know why. How much more credit could he get if he just toured the nation trying to get them all to take it? Take the vaccine I gave you. He could like stamp it in everyone's brain for all time that it's his vaccine. It'd be totally wrong. Because as we said a million times, he did basically nothing when it comes to the vaccine. The government gave our money. The government was always going to give our money for it. That has nothing to do with Trump. But he doesn't do that. He like behind closed doors got it. Him and Melania like effectively tried to pretend that they hadn't.
Ugh. I think they took one look at Obama's like upper arm photo getting the vaccine. And he was like, nope, can't do it. I know what this upper arm looks like. It's just a ripply fish belly paled, just, you know, like, you know, there's layers of, I don't know. It's not good is what I'm saying. Trump's upper arm. You shouldn't stare at it like the eclipse. And he knows people will, and he knows he has. So I don't know. Maybe it's just that. It's just that farmer stand you afraid of.
Is Francesca just being Francesca there? Yes, to some extent. And she seems to like nothing more than disgusting me. That is true. But are Trump's actual, like his thought process behind that, is it really that different from what Francesca was just saying? Like, if he thinks he's going to look weak because he's getting medicine, what's the difference if it's just because a shot or because his arm is pockmarked? Like, it's the same thing. He is too vain and shallow and has such a small amount of self-esteem that the prospect that somebody could see him needing medical attention terrifies him. Yeah. It is only marginally less shallow than that parody that Francesca just provided.
No, it's exactly right. I mean, that's the reason the presidents are doing it. They're saying that former presidents are doing it. They're like, we are human, even though I still don't believe that W is. But you know, it's like, we're human. We humble ourselves to get this vaccine. That's why we're doing this. This is part of the campaign. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm He-Man. If you by human, do you mean He-Man? I have the power. Okay, I'm sorry. He definitely still wears a He-Man nightie. Show me the nightie. Show me the nightie.
Nobody has ever made a He-Man nightie. But I'm glad you went with nightie because at least that provides coverage. So why is it that Republican men don't want to take the coronavirus vaccine? Oh, it's a mystery that will just astound scientists and researchers through the ages, except that it's not at all. It's super simple. First of all, Trump has himself implied that only weak men actually take it. But more importantly than that, especially because Trump has mostly receded into the darkness, at least for a little while, everyone they trust in the country has been trying to get them to question it. And we have been saying here for literally months at the Damage Report that Fox News was gonna turn on the vaccine. And people acted like I was crazy when I said that. Why would they do that? It's his vaccine, he'll get credit. And if people take it, we can go back to normal. It's everything they say they want. No, what they want is conspiracy theories and something they can use to make people feel victimized and like there's some sort of big threat that is more appealing than a functioning economy, which they're probably sure they're gonna get anyway. And so I wanna demonstrate what this trend looks like. I predicted it before it happened. And here is just, thanks to Media Matters, a bit of a skimming of what the past couple of months have been like. So why are they questioning it? Well, Laura Ingraham tells them that Biden's COVID relief speech is vaccine propaganda. Is something that is being propagandized a good thing? Is it something you should want? No, it's immediately suspect because people you hate are propagandizing about it to you. Should you take it? Well, what do Republicans not like? Being forced into things. And Tucker Carlson tells them that Joe Biden is doing vaccine coercion. He's not saying that the vaccine's bad and you shouldn't take it, because that would be a specific claim that you could have an issue with. He's just strongly implying that the Dems want to force you to do it. Are you the sort of man that lets people force you to do things? I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying. Let's see, Laura Ingraham brings on guests like RFK Jr., who obviously is a huge anti-vaxxer, but other guests that say that the COVID vaccine is just a plot to sell COVID vaccines, which, well, I mean, they do want to sell it, I guess. But of all of the times to have an issue with the pharmaceutical industry, which Fox does not, they're now trying to pretend under that guise that, I don't know, it's just corporations and you know how we always hate corporate profits and all that. So again, maybe it's just a money-making scheme, hardly something you need to take. And then there's the even more explicit references to conspiracy theories. So Tucker Carlson doesn't accidentally bring up Bill Gates and say that thanks to this, Bill Gates controls, quote, what you can and cannot do with your body. That's been like a core QAnon vaccine thing from the very beginning, that that's what this pandemic is about. And he's still doing that. That was like 3 weeks ago. He said that this is Bill Gates trying to control your body. And it's not just him. Laura Ingraham says that Gates is using pandemics to advance the Great Reset. So they both just accidentally landed on a QAnon thing there. Sean Hannity says that he's beginning to have doubts about getting the COVID vaccine. I guarantee the first minute he has available to get it, he will. But he's gonna pretend to his audience that he doesn't. All of them will. Laura Ingraham's getting
it. They all have it. I'm sorry. I bet you anything, they all have it. They all have gotten the vaccine. That's it. I am 100% convinced. There is many celebrities are trying to figure out when they should post their selfies of getting the vaccine because they got it a month ago.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Scheduled tweets.
all very in order. Oh yeah, sure. I just got it. No, everyone should be asking them at all times, have you gotten the vaccine? Because I guarantee you, if they haven't already gotten it, which I think they have, they will get it.
Because they want to be safe.
They want to be safe.
They want to be safe. They just don't care if you are. And so we can jump back to the very beginning of this. Tucker Carlson greeted the approval of the first vaccine saying, how are the rest of us supposed to respond to a marketing campaign like this? Well, nervously, because the ads were too glossy. You shouldn't get the vaccine. That's how he started this thing. But sometimes it's a lot more explicit. You know, just let's see, like a month ago, he said that health experts are clearly lying about the safety and effectiveness of the COVID vaccine. So I don't know why Republicans don't think they should get it. Tucker's just telling them that everybody's lying to them about it. But the funny thing is sometimes, and after all, like I said, the key is wanting to make their audience feels like victims. Sometimes they will directly flip that when it's useful. So for instance, when the news came out that there were some programs in some states to make sure that lower socioeconomic status like areas or you know, groups that are like areas that are predominantly non-white might have a little bit of preferential treatment to preferential chance to get it. He did a thing calling that eugenics against white people. So when you give the vaccine to black and brown people, you are doing a holocaust on the whites. But when they have access to it, they're probably just trying to make money and they're lying to you, you shouldn't take it. So it really does depend on the day whether the vaccine's good or not.
God.
But anyway, look, how can anyone be surprised by this? It has been a multi-month campaign from all of the biggest names at Fox to make people as suspicious as possible about it. And what do you know? They're suspicious about it. The mystery solved.
Take them down. I don't care. I'm like, I don't even, you know, I'm done. Take Fox down. This is our campaign. I mean, this is the struggle of our lifetime. That and climate change. We got 8 years to stop climate change and to stop Fox News. I am very much convinced of this. But like, of course, they're gonna lie to their audiences over and over again. And that's partly why I also think that this vaccine needs a massive campaign from the national government, the federal government. Like, this is not about going and traveling around the country, which Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are doing, which is fine, but like, that's not gonna get me to get the vaccine. If you're like, hey, Rihanna's giving a free concert to everyone who's got the vaccine, oh, I'm gonna get the vaccine. You know what I mean? Like, there are ways you can convince people. Hey, here's my suggestion. Remember all the like sort of misogynistic, problematic Axe body spray ads during, you know, the early 2000s? Take all of those and just swap Axe for the vax. And there you go. You get the
Vax
shot.
Body spray.
Yeah, Vax body spray. Girls are just all up in your pecs. You know what I mean? Girls are just, you know, they're just topless women are chasing you off of cliffs, as a Monty Python sketch literally does. But like, this is what we should be doing. I'm serious. Like, you want to go clubbing? Get the vaccine. And then just do this. Just constantly repeat that. It's not about appealing to people's like, you know, well, the community must be you know, inoculated. No. Get the vaccine. Get laid.
It's as simple as that.
Simple.
Get the that should be bumper stickers. You should produce mugs. Yeah, you're right. We do need something better. And look,
condoms. Write them on condoms. Just write it on the condom.
As I said, her favorite thing is making me squirt.
What's gross anyway. About that? Safe sex is gross. Okay.
Yes. Yes, because it's still sex and it grosses me out. Anyway, Trump's never gonna do it, obviously, but. You know, we can put a couple seconds just dude, come on, save the life of some of the poor dumb souls who've decided to worship you as their living God. He could, but he's not going to.
Okay, John, now, can I just say though, you can't create this anti-vax campaign or this vaccine, you know, questioning, vaccine curious campaign, sow all of this misinformation and then be like, oh, everyone's treating the right like we're a pariah. Oh my God. And that's like the ultimate cancel culture. It's just when you treat us like we're like disease ridden or whatever. It's like, yeah, you are. Okay. You are transmitting the virus at much higher rates. And there was like a recent study about states and that didn't lock down sooner, transmitting and red states actually transmitting the virus at faster rates. So like, don't tell us we're treating you like a pariah. You are a pariah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna spend months convincing our people to willingly get a disease. But don't call us Neanderthal. Don't do it. This feels like last year. We're gonna do countless hours of programming to try to stop right wingers from dying. And it won't work. And we won't get any credit for it. They will vastly prefer Tucker Carlson, who wants them to die if that's what it takes for him to be influential.
Sure.
To us who disagree on politics, but I want them to live. That's right. What we did all last year and we're doing it now. We're getting vaccinated, right wingers. Like, if you're a conservative and you're watching this, we're gonna get it as soon as we can and we're gonna die at lower rates. There's still gonna be a pandemic in 6 months, unfortunately, because people like you are still gonna be getting and transmitting the disease. I don't want you to die. Why won't you join me on that position? There's been a lot of recent polling about the vaccine and about the coronavirus. And people focus, I think rightfully, on the fact that Republican men don't wanna get the vaccine. But there's one other result that I found fascinating. And that was from a new Yahoo News YouGov poll that asked, do you believe the threat of coronavirus has been exaggerated? 58% of all respondents said no, which is good. 30% said yes. Among Republicans, 57% say that the threat is exaggerated and only 30% say it is not. And that is after, let's get the number, 534,476 people, as of when we're filming this, have already died. And 2 out of 3 Republicans say, yeah, it's been exaggerated. Nothing counts for anything. Nothing matters. Reality doesn't matter. And this is a very depressing time for me.
take down Fox News. That's it. I mean, that's exactly where it comes from. I mean, you know, none of the polling really matters so long as that trash is still being spouted.
Yeah. I do feel the need though to make it a little bit worse. Because the thing is, if you just show people that number that 57% say it's exaggerated despite a civil war of people dying, then you might think, okay, well, that's bad, but I don't know, what was it before the people died? Maybe it hasn't had as much of an effect as we would want, but it still had an effect. When the same question was asked exactly a year ago, skepticism was much more widespread, with 44% overall saying the threat was exaggerated. But among Republicans, that percentage was almost identical to today's at 58%. It's gone down 1% for over a half million deaths. That is what a half million dead Americans has gotten. Arguably, because it's statistical uncertainty, 1% more saying, I guess it wasn't being exaggerated. And I don't know, when I see that, I think we're supposed to have a public debate about whether it makes sense to like raise a certain tax, or like we're gonna look at like the average temperature, you know, over a period of time and try to set climate policy based on it. We're supposed to talk about facts and believe that that can be the basis for a functioning democracy. When a mountain of corpses has no effect on whether they think that it's exaggerated. Not like, do you think we should have universal basic income as a result of it? Not specific political stuff, just was it being exaggerated? Mm-hmm. And they still think that it was after so many people have died.
This is why representative democracy might be a good thing. This is why when you have 51 senators, you got a mandate and you got to abolish the filibuster and you got to bring us back to reality. That's why. Because some people, look, not everyone answering a landline on a Republican YouGov poll or whatever that was is gonna know like the next steps to take to stop climate change and, you know, create jobs and stop a virus. You know what I'm saying? They can't all be Faucis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's fine. I don't see a threat. Everything's fine. Yep, bye bye. You take care now. It's time for my Ingram.
That's such a scary image. That's one of those like write a horror story in two sentences things right there. Oh, that's my grandma. Senator Ron Johnson is just the worst. And over the past few days, the new reason that he's one of the worst is that he decided while talking about the Capitol riots, he wanted to contrast it a bit with some other riots and imply why he thinks people are freaking out about nothing. And people like him were never in any real danger on the 6th, as he'll make clear.
As I've made the comment that on January 6th, I never felt threatened. Because I didn't, and mainly because I knew that even though those thousands of people that were marching to the Capitol were trying to pressure people like me to vote the way they wanted me to vote, I knew those are people that love this country, that truly respect law enforcement, would never do anything to break a law, and so I wasn't concerned. Now, had the tables been turned, and Joe, this got me in trouble, had the tables been turned and President Trump won the election, and those were tens of thousands of Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters, I might have been a little concerned.
I mean, it doesn't take a lot of work to figure out all that he's saying and communicating there, Francesca. It's pretty obvious.
I have no words for this man. I watched this and I was like, what's funny about this? Nothing. Latent racism. Not only is it incredibly obviously racist and openly embracing the fact that he is a racist and he's also a hypocrite, because if Antifa or Black Lives Matter, i.e. black people, were breaking laws or doing the exact same thing, he would be concerned. So open hypocrite, open racist. And then the entire setup, which is they love the police. They weren't breaking laws. You know, when they were bashing a police officer's head in the doorway of a secured location they weren't allowed to enter, I knew they would never hurt police or break a law.
That's it.
What? What are you saying? What are you just cut to the chase, man. Just say it. Just be like, look, as a proud white supremacist, I wasn't really worried. Also, because my name wasn't deliberately uttered. Sure, the vice president's was, but they weren't trying to come for me, so I'm okay. Anyway, I survived it, even though I peed my pants a little bit on the actual day.
That's it. Yeah, white people can't break the law. And maybe if they're libs, then maybe I'll make a, you know, an exception for that. But otherwise, white people can't break the law. They're awesome. Everything they do is great. Other people are really suspicious. And I evaluate all social movements based on the melanin content of their skin. That's basically it. That was all that he said. They're not gonna break the, they were breaking the law. Why are so many getting arrested and being put behind bars? Weird, since they didn't break the law. And they assaulted people. I mean, the siege left 5 people dead, including a cop. 2 other officers were on duty that day, later died by suicide. More than 100 officers were injured. I guess they were taken down by the power of irony, since it wasn't the white people that did it. At least 40 rioters have been charged with assaulting law enforcement officers. I saw a rioter beating a cop, trying to kill him with the American flag. If that doesn't force conservatives to like think a little bit about where their movement is going, nothing is going to, because nothing is going to. Yeah. They're chasing a cop. That's what they're doing. They're beating cops. And he can pretend that, oh no, they're more pro cop. Again, like what we're talking about with the polls. And this is, I guess, the thing we say most often on the show. How are you supposed to have a functioning democracy when a significant chunk of the population, and especially their chosen representatives, people that they love Ron Johnson over the past few months as he's gotten crazier and crazier, feel no need whatsoever to have the things they say be reflective in the facts? The most obvious, demonstrable lies about what happened, but it doesn't bother him. He can just say it. He's not going to face any tough questions. Fox isn't gonna have a problem, and the base definitely isn't gonna have a problem, because they don't care about the facts. They care about the outcome. And the outcome, at least it presented, is follow what these crazy racists say, and white people will be in charge once again. And all the threat that you feel, that like Ingram and Tucker make you feel every night, we'll make that go away. We will put people back into their proper place in society. Yes. And anything goes in pursuit of that goal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Someone, the Bear's Den in the chat says the Nazgul didn't feel threatened when the orcs attacked Gondor either. Yeah. Yeah. If I was Marjorie Greene, I wouldn't have been worried on that particular day. If I was one of the people who told them to attack, I wouldn't have been particularly worried. Trump hasn't been in the public eye much recently, but he is still holding events. Mar-a-Lago's popping all the time, with conservatives going down there for like charities to help dogs. We know that's an issue he cares about. But anyway, at these events, people meet the president, they take pictures of the president, and sometimes they tweet out these experiences, as one Nick Adams did, tweeting, "President Trump is looking better than ever before. He's getting in shape for 2024, and the liberals are freaking out." And so I don't know exactly what it, like, I guess I'm a liberal in this case, so I'm freaking out. I don't know what it is. Is it the picture that's making me freak out, that I'm so intimidated by like this twin of The Rock there, this Khal Drogo in a red hat? Am I, what exactly is freaking me out? I don't know what's supposed to be freaking me out there, but that was tweeted. Like, that wasn't parody. I mean, I guess it was inadvertently, but that person worships Trump and sees that photo and thinks, our emperor is back, baby. He's gonna take it over again. What do you think, Francesca?
I mean, okay, I'm just gonna be real with you. Obviously, liberals are freaking out because he looks decrepit. Trump looks terrible. Okay. And it's because he's 74, 5, or whatever he is. And he looks like he's losing weight. And what happens when older men start to lose weight is they look kind of saggy and they look kind of tired, and he looks a little like he's, you know, his face isn't quite fulled out, you know, because he's just had, he's used to being a bigger man. Mm-hmm. And he's not bronzed, he's not wearing all his bronze, so that's another reason why he looks kind of gross. I mean, that's the thing is like with all of the, oh, he's orange, blah, 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 all the shading. Yeah. You know what's worse? Trump without all the shading.
Mm-hmm.
It's even nastier.
I mean, so I'm looking at that second picture and look, you know, analyzing the physical appearance of politicians is not anyone's preferred way to spend their time. But this guy brought it up, so we're gonna do it. And also, I've been watching a lot of Dr. House, and so I like diagnosing people, even though I have none of the actual knowledge. There's something going on with his face there. I don't know what it is. I don't know if that's just a natural blotchiness that comes with advanced age. But his face is some interesting colors in interesting patterns. I will just say that. I don't know if his face has been stenciled in some weird way. I don't know if he's just been slapped, but something is going on with his face. And it's weird. Also, a lot of people have pointed out that in the zoomed out photo, it looks like he is holding Laura Trump's hand. Now, they've implied that it's another sign of him being decrepit, that he has to hold her hand. I don't think that that's true at all. I think that if you're a young woman near him, you want to be holding his hand because then at least you know where it is and you know where it can go. And it's much safer to have it in your hand than anywhere else. But anyway, no, I don't think I'm freaking out. I think I don't know if he's gonna make it to the next election, but if he does, sure, he can run. It's not his physical prowess that I find intimidating.
No, and guys, and I just please stop like with the like your body shaming, you're being, you know, bigoted against elderly people. No, I'm being bigoted against a bigot. I'm being bigoted against a terrible white supremacist that oversaw an incredible rise in Nazism, American Nazism, that is not dead yet. So stop with the, we didn't treat everybody. No, F this guy, okay? F him forever. And like, you know, he might like that. The point is, gross. He's gross, he's disgusting, and he deserves all of our criticism. And finally, his outer appearance is starting to match his inner hollow, disgusting, soulless shell of a you know, being that keeps hauling around his terrible ideas. All right, that's it. So anyway.
You're just gross. Anyway, can I, so this obviously has not been, you know, the most newsworthy stuff. But let me tie it into the news because I want to remind people that we are still learning more and more about what's being termed long COVID. It's the long-term health implications of it. So I just want you to bear in mind that millions of Americans are going through what almost certainly behind the scenes Trump is going through, which is you can say that he's like getting in shape. His internal organs are probably have affected by the fact that he had COVID and that he had it pretty bad. They will never admit that ever, by the way. He will never admit that he's having those problems, and maybe he's not. We'll never know because they're not admitting it. But it is entirely possible that he is still suffering from damage that was done to his lungs, to his heart. That is a thing that is affecting millions of Americans and in theory could affect him too. So
That gives me so much joy. I wish long COVID on Trump. And no one else.
It's the only long thing about, anyway. Okay, I think we've reached rock bottom. brought to you by the second coming of the rock, Donald Trump.
Hello and welcome to the TYT Kitchen. I'm here for a very special food focused top 10 list. This is something that I promised about 2 weeks ago, but then the whole Oprah, Meghan Markle thing happened and we kind of had to do a Royals focused one. But now we can get back to the promise, which was the top 10 Pop-Tart flavors of all time. Now, you might be, for instance, a sane person and think, who cares? Who eats Pop-Tarts as an adult? But the answer is me, I do, plus lots of people do. They come out with a lot of different flavors. That implies that people are definitely buying them. But more importantly, what you need to remember is that these lists are definitive. As soon as I say it, that is the top 10 list. So you're gonna wanna pay attention. And if you haven't eaten Pop-Tarts in a while, maybe consider it. It's really convenient and they come in a lot of different flavors, although not all of them are good, which we will now go through. So at number 10, I have not really my number 10. The issue is that I'm not ranking all of them, but I wanna make sure that I tell you the worst. And it's not that it's the worst flavor. It's the balance of a flavor that lots of people still eat and is very widely available, but is not nearly good enough, which is I'm putting strawberry and blueberry both in this slot. The frosted, but especially the unfrosted. Oh my God. An unfrosted strawberry blueberry is just like, there's a wide variety of different Pop-Tart crusts. It is the, like, it breaks apart so much. It's like dust, basically, that's been compressed into a crust. And strawberry blueberry, if you're like me and you've grown up here where you've had access to Pop-Tarts for your whole life, especially early on, the only ones that you probably had access to were strawberry and blueberry, which means that your taste buds have just been so bludgeoned over the years by endless strawberry and blueberry that the idea of eating more, it's almost not even worth it to have a Pop-Tart at that point. You know what? You'd rather probably eat something else. Like, for instance, I have here a little mini stroopwafel, which is a thing from the Netherlands, I believe. And I personally find to be kind of like fancy Pop-Tarts and international. I'm not putting on a list or anything. The list isn't that fluid, but you should know that it's out there. No, if you think that you want strawberry blueberry, what you probably want is a fruity Pop-Tart. What you probably want is my number 9, which is wildberry. Now, wildberry has, at least to my memory, a marginally better crust and a flavor that's at least a little bit interesting. It's not boring like strawberry or blueberry. Get wildberry. Plus, it's more physically appealing. The cool little slashes of color on the top. It's a more exciting, fruity Pop-Tart. Number 8 is different. This is the first of the, I guess, the non-fruity Pop-Tarts. That would be s'mores. Now, s'mores is very popular. I do think that it's a little bit overrated. But what s'mores has going for it is that it's the right sort of crumbly Pop-Tart. It doesn't break apart into little dust pellets like those aforementioned ones. It breaks in nice chunks. The issue with s'mores is that while the flavor is perfectly good, it is a bit sickly sweet, and it's a bit, like, gel-like. Like, it's almost like chocolate syrup has been put into it, which that seems like too much. When you're eating a s'mores Pop-Tart, there is no way to deceive yourself that you're eating anything other than a hardcore dessert, and probably not at a time when you should be eating dessert. The best Pop-Tarts provide plausible deniability, which s'mores doesn't have, but it does taste good. Now, at number 7, we have cherry, which I find to be, I believe, I'm checking, not to give spoilers, the best of the fruity Pop-Tarts. Wildberry is perfectly good, but cherry is an actual good flavor, good crust, good coverage of frosting. I think that if you want a fruity one, and if you've had access to them for your whole life and you've been bludgeoned again by strawberry and blueberry, that's the way to go. But obviously, because those are clustered in the top of my list, I'm really not that into the fruity Pop-Tarts. I think that while they can make Pop-Tarts that taste good, doing the fruit flavors, like, it's way too artificial, way too heavy in sugar for those to really read right. Like, you know what you're having, and what you're having is not fruit. Now, at number 6, we have chocolate chip, which I find to be basically a better version of s'mores. They're both, I don't really have the vocabulary necessarily to describe it. The way that they crumble is very similar. There's another one on my list that's up there as well. It's less like a gel. It's less like you're just eating a bunch of chocolate syrup, basically. But tastes good. If you want chocolate, I personally find that to be a little bit less over-the-top indulgent than s'mores is. So that's chocolate chip. Now, I say that, the next one is perhaps a little bit more indulgent, and that is chocolatey churro. Now, this is not a flavor that you necessarily can get anywhere, certainly not everywhere, but I have fond memories. I personally think anything plus cinnamon is better than it otherwise would have been. Churro is one of the best flavor profiles in the world. Again, I don't know if it's even available anymore, but it deserves to be remembered, damn it. Number 4, I'm gonna have to give credit to the audience, actually, because I had never had Pop-Tart Bites before. It's debatable whether it should even be on the list. It's not really a Pop-Tart, it's a bite, but the brand is the same, so I'm gonna go with it. So these are bags of little mini Pop-Tarts, little bite-sized things. And when I was told that they have it in brown sugar cinnamon, which I always like, I thought that could be good. But is it really gonna be a good ratio of crust to filling? Like, when it's shrunk down to that size, isn't it gonna be just too much crust? But it's not. And in fact, it's not the same sort of crust as the regular brown sugar cinnamon. It's actually quite good. And I would say the amount of food that you get, probably more reasonable than eating like a whole thing of brown sugar cinnamon. That's a lot of calories right there. But that is my number 4. Number 3 continues the trend of cinnamon. That's the cinnamon roll. It's just good. And this one is partially being included because I know that both our producers, Marissa and Sophie, are big fans of it. The cinnamon roll Pop-Tart has the best crumble of any Pop-Tart, which is a combination of the composition of the crust as well as the filling. It just works with cinnamon roll. It breaks apart in a way that is nice, doesn't become all crummy. It has a nice cinnamon flavor, so you can't go wrong with that. Number two is, I believe, the newest on the list. That is Fruit Loops. Now, I understand that I have been complaining about fruity artificial flavors and too much sugar, and I get that a Fruit Loop Pop-Tart probably sounds like it's just colored sugar, and you're not that far off, but they really nailed the flavor. Like, some flavors, when they put it in a different type of food, doesn't actually translate very well. This one does. It tastes like Fruit Loops, and it turns out that's not a bad thing, even when it's not in a bowl and there's no milk there. It's got a good crumble. It doesn't really taste fruity, so I don't think that I'm really backtracking on my claims earlier. Like, Fruit Loops have nothing to do with fruit, but it's not bad. I think it's pretty good. And it's not the sort of thing that I think most people would probably try because, you know, we're adults. Why are you eating Fruit Loop Pop-Tarts? But you maybe give it a go. And number one, if you've been watching the show for a long time, you're probably not surprised by, and especially considering my number four, it's brown sugar cinnamon, which I have had access to for about as long as blueberry and strawberry, and yet there's something about it where I just can't get sick of it. I think a brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart is not subtle in any particular way. It's a huge amount of sugar and calories. That's basically all it is. That said, it's not like a really sickly fruity flavor. It's not like you're eating chocolate. In comparison to the other two normal ways that these Pop-Tarts go, it is the most subtle of them. I mean, you're definitely eating dessert, and yet it doesn't punch you in the mouth. I think it's a little bit easier to justify. And it's just appealing to me. I don't know if it's the crust. I know my theories about how different the different crusts are. Not a lot of people believe that that's actually true, but I will go to my grave fighting for that. It's got a good crust. It's a very solid consistency. It's like a brick, really, which doesn't sound good. And yet, I guess if you put cinnamon on a brick, it's not that bad. And so there was really no question in my mind that that would be number one. All the rest, I had to really think about it and figure it out and do a little bit of research to make sure that I wasn't forgetting any of the, like the chocolate churro that I haven't had in a while. But there was no question. It's going to be brown sugar cinnamon. And if I redo this list in like 5 years, the others might change. I have a feeling that one's probably not going to. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here. This was a weird one, huh? But anyway, people seem to want to know what it was, and there's nothing I love more than making these top 10 lists in response to requests. So if you'd like, in the comments below this one, you can put requests for future ones. You can always tweet us, of course. And I want to thank you for being a member. Our members of Tier 2 and Tier 3 are what make this possible. So as always, thank you for supporting the show and the network.
We are now in the second week of the trial of former police officer Derek Chauvin, the man who knelt obviously on George Floyd's neck just about a year ago and began such a massive like tide of social activism, an entire movement. So what can we expect as we go forward? How long is this process going to be? What is the possibility that something like justice will emerge out the other end? Well, we're very lucky to be joined once again on the program by civil rights attorney Charles Coleman Jr. Charles, how's it going?
John, how you doing? Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me back.
I'm always glad to talk to you, and especially glad to talk to you about this because these trials can be complicated and they can be lengthy. We're still in like the jury selection portion, which I've heard that it could last up to several weeks, correct?
Yes, that is correct. In a case like this, jury selection obviously has to be taken very seriously. However, the added layer of difficulty with choosing a jury in this case is finding jurors who have not been previously either exposed or tainted by the wide exposure that this case has gotten. Obviously, this is a case that had, you know, a global a reaction to and its response in terms of how people felt about it. People took to the streets, people sort of have protested, and this sparked the continuance or the resurgence of a movement globally around anti-blackness, around anti-police brutality, and around racism. And so because of that, it is going to be very challenging for the prosecutors, or for the defense rather, to find 12 jurors that they believe are completely untainted by that exposure. In fact, today, because of the $27 million settlement that was announced with George, with the estate of George Floyd, in the middle of jury selection, his defense attorneys have actually now moved to have the trial move to a different venue, because they don't believe that they're, it's even capable or possible for getting a set of unbiased jurors where the trial is set to take place currently.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. I mean, there are few things that have been talked about more over the past year, but I wonder too, like, let's say that you were able to find people who hadn't paid a lot of attention to it. Like, I wonder, wouldn't those people almost necessarily be biased in some other way? Like, I feel like being so detached from the news wouldn't be randomly distributed across the population. Like, I wonder if there would be some other things that'd be correlated with having no idea what's been going on in the country over the past year. What are your expectations for the jury? Are they going to be able to find a group of people? Do you feel like that the jury in some way could end up being biased in one way or another here?
Absolutely. I'm going to speak from my experience as a prosecutor, as well as my experience as a civil rights attorney on this one. Just someone who has tried a bunch of cases before. The reality is that there is absolutely no way that you're going to find 12 jurors and then, you know, anywhere between 4 to 6 or 8 alternates who have not all, you know, at one point or another heard about or know something about this story. And to your point, you know, the idea of a completely unbiased jury is a farce. That is a fairy tale. And if someone was so disconnected from the news that they had not heard anything about this case at all, it would concern me as a lawyer on either side at the end of the day, because one of the things that I used to talk about as a prosecutor and even as a defense attorney, you know, on the civil side, is to say, I need you all to employ your common sense. Like, I need you all to come to here and bring your real world experience and the things that you already know about life and apply them to the facts as they are presented to you in this case. Well, if you're that disconnected from the news, that you have not know, that you don't know anything about George Floyd or this case, or you just are blind as to the issue of police brutality, that to me threatens like the common sense scale that I just talked about in a way that I would not want on my jury. At the end of the day, the question is going to really have to be, and this is the most fundamental question in choosing a jury in any trial, are you going to be able to be fair and impartial as to the facts of this case? And I mean, at the end of the day, that is the standard. That's all that any attorney or judge can ask for. I mean, there are obviously other questions in voir dire that may give people a sense as to whether they're qualified or whether they're a good fit. And you can use your strikes, your preemptive strikes on both sides to disqualify jurors who you're just not comfortable with. But fundamentally, that's what it's gonna come down to. Are you able to be fair and impartial about the facts of this case as they are presented through the evidence at trial?
So it's certainly a concern in this case. And, you know, I know there are a lot of concerns about the ability of juries in general to be anything like impartial when it's a case like this, where a white person, a cop in this case, kills a black person. I want to read a quote from The Nation. Ellie Mistall wrote this, saying the jury system is set up by white people, and one of its primary functions is to let white people go free when they kill black people. Maybe that system will fail this time, allowing justice to be done. I mean, I think people who've paid attention to cases like this in the past know that the vast majority of the times there's no consequences for the cop. What part do juries play in producing that pattern? And do you think that it might be different in this case?
I think juries play a significant part. Obviously, I think that there is a conversation to be had here around the systemic nature of how a criminal justice system works and systemic inequity in how it works. So what do I mean there? I mean that there are a number of different parts. You have to examine on a larger scale, stepping back from this trial and looking at trials in general, and talking about some of the outcomes that we have seen, you have to examine the relationship between prosecutors' offices and police. And then you have to examine sort of the relationship between those entities and then the bench. And because of that, they all have an impact. And that's why I use the systemic example, because the judge is going to, you know, the prosecutors are going to dictate what charges they may or may not bring. And then the judge is going to dictate what evidence may or may not come into court. And then finally, what charges they may or may not instruct about. And so when you talk about, you know, the function of the jury, which is supposed to be the fact finders, they are supposed to be the ones who determine the fact. And the judge is supposed to be the person who gives you the law to which you apply the fact and you ultimately reach a verdict. All of this is a system that is interlocked. And so, you know, while I don't necessarily disagree with that quote, I think it raises a larger question as to what does justice actually look like within the midst of a system that is wrought with inequity? Mm-hmm. What does justice look like if you already have a system that is already imbalanced with bias inherently within it?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned there the choosing of charges. Last week on Thursday, the judge reinstated a count of third degree murder. What did you think about that decision?
I thought that this was a very good decision for Keith Ellison and his team and the prosecutors. I think that ultimately the third degree, which is essentially the reckless, is something that gives them an opportunity to get a homicide conviction. I didn't necessarily know that they were going to get a murder conviction. The murder two is possible, but from a statute perspective, in terms of reading the statutes one next to the other, I think that if they are not able to get murder two, they certainly can make out murder three a lot more easily. And because of that, that is their best shot, in my opinion, looking at the facts as they are and considering what evidence is likely to be admitted and what evidence may be kept out. I think that's their best shot at being able to secure a murder conviction in this case.
I know that it's obviously a huge question and it's a lot of speculation, but do you have any idea or any prediction about what the defense might look like, considering what we know about what happened, the fact that you can watch it happening in real time? How do you defend Derek Chauvin in this case?
You know, I think that they're going to rely on the medical report. I think they're going to try and basically make the argument that perhaps there could have been some other factor which may have contributed to his death. I think that they may go, if they're losing their battle, I think that they may try to go toward intent. There's not a whole lot that they have here, but I think that, you know, from a legal perspective, intent is probably their biggest play. And it's possible, very, 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 very possible, but not necessarily likely, that they may, in order to buttress the intent defense, talk about the fact that there were three other officers who were present who did not necessarily see that there was anything wrong procedurally with what Chauvin had done in terms of his actions and his conduct at the time. So because of those things, they may sort of hang their hat on intent and hope that they may be able to get some level of reasonable doubt in the minds of the jury based off of that. It will be interesting to see whether the prosecution ultimately goes for top count or gives the jury an out. And what I mean by that is, when you're a prosecutor, you have to make the decision as to what charges you want to be read to the jury. And in some cases, you may opt not to have lesser charges. You want to go for the home run because you don't want the jury to sort of come back with a lower charge because the option was available and they were trying to sort of split the baby, proverbially speaking, and give the prosecution something without taking away from the defense. If they do that, if they go sort of all or nothing and they go top count, that's it, murder two, or just murder two or murder three. Now they put the jury in a position where if for some reason there's an issue around intent, that it's harder to get the murder two, and that's the value, going back to your previous question, of the murder three, because the murder three has less of an intent component there that will still allow them to return a murder conviction. So it all sort of comes full circle.
Interesting. And I'm sure that we'll be checking in as we go. Do we have any idea of what the timeline might look like for this, the entirety of the case?
I mean, once the case gets started, you know, assuming that there are not any major snags in terms of impropriety or something that might trigger a mistrial, I anticipate that this case will go relatively quickly. I mean, I can't imagine that this is a case that would go anything longer than, in terms of the presentation of evidence, 2.5, maybe 3 weeks. I think that for a case of this magnitude, and that's stretching it, I think that for a case of this magnitude, if the judge is moving efficiently, making reasonable rulings on evidence that are not significantly challenged, like I said, barring any sort of mishap that would trigger a mistrial or something that would cause a serious halt in the proceedings, this is a case in terms of the presentation of evidence and arguments from the opening to summation. I see no reason why it should go beyond 3 weeks at the most.
Okay, that's actually quicker than I expected. But as I said, hopefully we'll be able to check in as we go through, see if some of your predictions about the defense might be true, if there's any curveballs. But regardless, Charles, as always, we appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, John. I'll be watching just like you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.